graduated thing that runs from about, well, the start of driving age, right on up to age 29.
29?
Yes, sir.
It used to be around 26 or so is what you considered. If you were male, you were considered high risk.
Yes, sir. And there's a different distinction on female drivers as well. And that's why I say I believe we can acquire that information, because the rating systems insurance companies use are tied into age.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a big research project, or is that something you can kind of lay your hands on?
It's not something we have ready right now, and so I'm not really sure just what it's going to involve, but I can certainly tell you in a very short period of time what it would take.
You might just give us a phone call and say this would be an easy thing to pick up, or it takes a lot of time.
I guess the only other comment that might be of interest concerning this, if legislation like this were adopted, I would not expect to see the rates to change overnight. I think typically what you're going to have is a question mark on the part of insurers as to what it will do. Mm-hmm. It may make them a little more receptive to writing young drivers. It should show up in experience, however, in a relatively short period of time.
They wouldn't take that 28% figure you gave us, for example, and say, well, we'll go on this.
No, sir. And the reason for that is that 28% figure, that's an average. That varies all over the department ballpark.
I noticed that.
In New Hampshire, 74% is
increased there.
I think I could logic why Montana increased. They've got something of a revolt there concerning the speed limit. Mm-hmm. And at one time they had a no limitation on the speed limit during the day and a specific limitation at night. And my understanding was that was pretty routinely ignored. Mm-hmm. I rather suspect it's probably a combination of the way they're enforcing their speeding laws there and that difference between day and night time speed limits.
Any other questions, Mr. Polk?
Thank you, Mr. Polk.
Mr. Stern?
For the record, my name is Barry Stern. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law and the Criminal Division. I have a very minor comment about the bill, and doesn't go at all to the merits of the bill. One of my duties is an assistant AG is representing the Alaska Police Standards Council, and they had a recent meeting in Sitka last week, and they are familiar with the bill. And the question that they raised was, by raising the drinking age to 21, it may create a problem for a very few officers that are under the age of 21 that have to do bar checks. The Alaska State Troopers require that a trooper be 21, so it's no problem with them. But there are some village public safety officers and also some municipal officers that are 19, 20. Anyway, I have, to the extent that the bill is going to move, I've drafted up a very short amendment to it that simply says that the provisions of this chapter that regulate the conduct of a person under 21 don't apply to a peace officer acting within the scope and authority of his employment. For whatever reason, you may simply decide you just want to keep police officers out of bars, even if they are doing a bar check if they're under 21. That's simply a policy decision. I just wanted to raise it for you.
I have no problem with that, but while Barry's here, may I ask something related? Are bartenders required to be state licensed, or is that municipal licensed?
I'm sorry. I don't know. I can't answer that off the top of my head.
They're not licensed. Okay.
So these people are not drinking in the bar, it's just making checks.
That's correct. Routinely, you would have an officer maybe go through a bar occasionally and just make a check, and there are, again, a few officers that are under the age of 21.
Mm-hmm. Any questions otherwise?
Thank you. Yeah. Do you wish to have, I've made enough copies for the committee of a draft that would deal with that? I'll just give it to your staff.
Of course, I think I'd have a little difficulty saying that a police officer in the performance of his duty could be in the bar when a dishwasher performs his duty couldn't. I had a little difficulty with that, I guess.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd just like to identify the latest handout, is something that I asked Nancy to copy. It's something I received from AHSPA. I'm not sure exactly what that is.
Highway Safety Planning Agency.
Okay. And on the bottom, there's some interesting statistics as to the involvement in accidents and the alcohol-related accidents, and the relationship of that to ratio, that to percentage of drivers, licensed drivers. And that's why I had these figures last time, and that's why I was trying to find out what the breakdown would be by sort of above age 18, below 29. Unfortunately, we don't have this.
Well, except from help from this office out there, and drug abuse isn't broken down in this bracket either. Mr. Schultz?
My name is Irvin Schultz. I'm a senior class president at the high school. And what I'm here generally for is to provide an opinion from the teenage standpoint, maybe give you gentlemen an opportunity to get some information on how it is from a teenage standpoint or what our availability is to alcohol. Not necessarily to deal in statistics. Statistics are pretty strongly in favor of the bill. But what I'm concerned about is if the bill passes, when it actually goes through, is it just going to be a piece of paper, or is it going to be something that's going to accomplish what it set out to do? I found that, say you raise it to 21, my feelings are that availability will be decreased for some people, but not greatly for everyone. Right now, just on a parallel line with drugs, drugs and the penalty for dealing in drugs is much more stiffer than with alcohol, and it's considered by our American moral standards to be worse than alcohol. Yet we have amphetamines in elementary schools and worse drugs in junior high here in Juneau. And that's harder to get access to than alcohol. I feel that if it's raised, I don't think it'll have a great impact on our high schoolers or anybody underage having access. Don't get me wrong, I'm definitely opposed to the idea of drunken driving. I believe that what may be more effective is legislation to increase penalties for drunken driving at any age. I think those are very important things. And it's been brought up that there is a problem with restaurants. Right now we're planning senior prom for Saturday evening. Legally, there's not a nice restaurant in town that somebody underage can go up to. Now it just depends on the ownership of the restaurant on what they allow. You know, how they interpret the bill or how much they worry about the legislation. Right now, as far as legal places to go to Juneau for prom, you can legally go up to McDonald's, or the Brown Bear Cafe, or J&J's, restaurants like that. We're trying to step around that. It may not seem like a large problem, but for 100 couples to go out for dinner, it's almost impossible. We're providing chaperones. Some of the restaurants say that they don't care. They haven't had any problems with law enforcement, but some have. And some settle for parental permission. Some there's just an absolute, you know, if you're underage, you can't get in unless you're chaperoned by somebody above age. I believe that's something that should be looked into. But generally, I do question whether the bill is going to be effective and whether it will, in fact, cut down the availability of minors to alcohol. Our Costco is kind of a different place than any other place in the United States. And wherever you are, generally in a high school atmosphere, you're bombarded with temptation of alcohol. Availability in Alaska is very easy. And as far as the idea that freshmen in high school are going to be associating with seniors in high school when they get to be seniors, they'll talk to their friends who are out of high school, it's not necessarily that association doesn't add to the availability. because classes are generally, you associate with people of your own age. Senior class, you associate with seniors. It's friends, it's people that are noted for availability, brothers and sisters. And one of the gentlemen who spoke earlier said that there was quite a number of arrests by the police this past weekend, minors drinking. And what that is a result of is extra policemen in the police force. My impression was that there are a number of rookies that just graduated from the Sitka Academy. And so it's easier to enforce the laws that we have right now. And that's what happened this weekend. They had a better police force. It was easier for them to enforce the laws. And it paid off. Maybe the answer is enforcing the laws that we have, or making stiffer penalties. Are there any questions that you gentlemen have?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You speak very well.
Thank you.
The most compelling argument, in my mind, is the accessibility of alcohol for the younger people, especially the thought that even a person as young as 14 may be in a class or be friends with somebody 19. And that individual 19 can go out during the lunch hour and buy alcohol. And that part concerns me, I think, more than just about any other aspect of this question. Your comment was that raising the drinking age really wouldn't impact the accessibility for young people. Would you expand on that just a little bit more?
Do you know
21-year-olds? I mean, are there is it really that easy for you to get alcohol from a 21-year-old if we raise that drinking age? Is the alcohol really going to be as readily available as it is now?
Oh, I believe so. Generally, if someone of a young age wants alcohol, they're going to get it. Where there's a will, there's a way. Somebody who wants it is going to have some amount of street knowledge or have connections somehow with their friends who have friends. But right now, I have many friends who are, if you raise the age to, say, 21, people that I work with. Right now, I work with a staff of people, 30 people, and they're all well over the age of 21. That's kids work with people, and older brothers and sisters are a contributing factor. And don't get me wrong, I hardly condone these people. Mm-hmm. And even, like I provided the example of the drugs, that it's just staggering to find out that you know, it may look bad that 14-year-olds are getting arrested and things like that, but to find that in our elementary schools, amphetamines are being sold. It's pretty appalling. I think it's not necessarily an issue that can be totally controlled by legislation or enforcement. It's a great moral issue. It's what the American society has imposed, or you know, the social structure of the schools have imposed. There's countries with no drinking age that have no drinking problem. And I'm just wondering that it seems that as more legislation is incurred, the problem's getting worse. And there's got to be some way to crack down, but I'm wondering if this is the way.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, sort of following up on what you've been talking about, while availability of alcohol to younger people may not be effective, might such consumption lead to less drunken driving, though? Because it would be, like drugs, alcohol might be consumed in a more surreptitious manner.
Well, the drunken, I don't have statistics to substantiate anything on drunken driving, what the ages are, or what age group is more prevalent for drunken driving. But if there's any accessibility at all to anybody who is a potential drunken driver, somebody who's going to abuse the drug and then drive, be responsible. Generally, the person who is going to drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs is a person who's going to abuse the accessibility, whether the laws are stiff or lenient. So if that person is going to drink and drive when the laws are 19, they're going to drink and drive when the laws are 21. You're just creating kind of an enforcement problem. You've got two more years of people, a larger percentage of population to enforce.
Mr. Chairman, I actually, now that I look at the statistics, I guess I could have answered this question myself. The rate of alcohol-related accidents is three times as high in the 15 to 18 age group, which isn't supposed to be consuming alcohol, as it is in the 19 to 29-year-old, and four times as high as higher ages. So those who are getting it illegally now are actually most accident-prone, for what it was for.
And those who are getting it illegally now are going to get it illegally then. I just before I came over here, I tried to get some information, some statistics on, specifically Alaskan statistics, that would be more applicable to Alaska, since we are sort of unique. The only thing I found, House Research has prepared a letter with some statistics on drunken driving, how we compare with the nation. And I would like to get that to you. I believe in this, don't quote me on this, we had out of number per 100,000 of population, I believe there was like 623 drunken drivers as the nation's average, as compared with 642 for Alaska. We're a little above normal, but the paper does has some interesting statistics on Alaska's drunk driving and on our enforcement.
But, you know, again, statistics can be read in a couple different ways.
Right.
If we're above on just across the board, and when you sit down and analyze Alaska, you know, 40% of your population is out there where there are very few cars. You know, when you look at Juneau, Alaska, there's a significant number of fewer cars within the high school student population probably than in Anchorage. You know, just because of the way Juneau is established. When you look at the southeast communities, that's probably pretty much so. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that Alaska is not a very good state to use that kind of an outright figure on because of our particular geography and probably fewer cars for high school students.
I think that it's going to be maybe a difficult task on your part to evaluate the statistics that are thrown in front of you. Because there's a pass of them, and I found that statistics can be used either way. They can be used as a person wants to use them. And there's a great number out here. And Alaska is quite different from the rest of the world. I found that in having lived other places, there is a lot easier accessibility to alcohol, and it just seems like it's all around you. More restaurants, per se, have alcohol license, especially. That's what caught my eye. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, one last question. If you were convinced that increasing the drinking age to 21 would reduce the number of fatalities, fatal accidents, what would you do?
Truthfully, I would increase it. If I was convinced that, yes, when we put this bill into action, this piece of paper that we have before you right now, that this bill is going to be functional not only on the road and decreasing fatalities, but also taking into circumspect other things like the restaurants, etc. Yes, anybody in their right mind would send it through.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charlie Smith, and I'm Director of Highway Safety for the state. I was out of town the last time hearings were held on this bill, and I understand there were some gaps in Alaskan statistics. I would like to pass out at this time some statistics developed by my office, if I may. These statistics deal with the age group that we're talking about, and Mr. Chairman, what this says in essence is in 1979 we had 80 fatalities in Alaska due to highway accidents. 48 of those fatalities were alcohol related. Out of those 48, 15 of the fatalities were in the age group 0 to 18. Unfortunately, our statistic recapture system doesn't let us break it down any further than that in that particular age group. 9 of those fatalities were in the 19 and 20-year-old bracket. What this comes to is out of the total of 48 fatalities, 50% of those fatalities involving alcohol were related to the age group that this bill would affect. I might add also that the number of licensed drivers in these age groups is a little over 13,000, close to 14,000, which is about 5.1% of the entire driving population or licensed population in Alaska, which brings out a little bit what Mr. Kelly was saying about the fact that, you know, we have to look at the various areas of the state. In my agency, we have to look at the overall licensed number of licensees and so on in order to really develop our statistics, because there are differences within the states between the various communities, between the types of communities, and so on. But if you'll notice, in 1979 and 80, and again I apologize to the committee because our 81 statistics are not yet ready, the statistics show, and as Mr. Schultz pointed out, I agree that, you know, statistics can be used in very, very many ways. I don't advocate either way on the bill personally. I think from a highway safety point of view, I'm going to tell you what's happening in Alaska, and the committee, of course, will make their own decision. I think the overrepresentation of the age group in consideration in fatalities in Alaska is of great concern to my agency and to me personally. I think it should be to everyone in Alaska. I think if we can do something about it, I think we should. I don't know if raising the drinking age would have this result, because we didn't have these statistics showing what was happening before the age was lowered. I do have information, Mr. Cook had some information from the Insurance Institute and other agencies. I do have some information that I'd be happy to pass out that shows what happened in some of the other states that lowered drinking ages and then subsequently had to raise them again because they were having such a problem. And the problem they were having was the involvement of youth in fatal highway accidents. Other than that, I'd be happy to answer questions. Again, I was in the age group. We all were at one time. I came to Alaska when I was, you know, right on the borderline, and it was tough. You know, you couldn't socialize. I understand all these things, so I have to look at it objectively. But there again, these statistics that my office has developed show what's happening in these age groups. We know this is what's going on. And when you have 72% in 1980 of involvement in fatalities because of alcohol in these age groups, and you only have, 5 to 9% of the licensed drivers in that age group, something's wrong. And again, I don't know if the legislation will correct that problem. My agency, of course, advocates and supports anything that will help. And we feel that this bill would help.
No, it's just difficult. This is pretty black and white when you look at it here, and obviously this is pretty close. I'm just trying to decide, you know, how many of these 50% in 1980 and 72% in 50% 1979, 72% in 1980 were actual drivers in that age group and how many were just innocent victims of those drivers.
That truthfully,
although there
Senator,
isn't much difference.
It does make a big difference. Again, unfortunately, the way the information is retrieved by the investigating officer or whatever, they don't always tell us that. The forms that are filled out, bear in mind now you have an officer out there and an EMT that are, which is another program that my agency funds and that. They're trying to do all these things at the scene of the accident. It's always hard to say, well, this guy was the driver, so they put him down that way. We just can't truthfully answer that, Senator.
Well,
you know,
regardless, these figures are so overwhelming, it's just stunning. The 50% of the alcohol-related traffic accidents fatalities from 1979 were in a 0 to 20 age group. And 72% in 1980 were in a 0 to 20 age group.
I, again, understand that, Senator.
Mr. Smith, let me ask you a couple of questions on Mike. When they say alcohol-related, what does that mean?
Okay, that means
that somebody was driving under the influence, or does it mean that somebody in one of the vehicles had been drinking, or what? How is that defined as best you can get it?
Okay, the new system, again, Senator, or Mr. Chairman, if the officer doesn't fill the information out correctly, we don't really know. We think it's being filled out correctly in most cases. The way the accident reports are designed, it asks the status of the driver. A lot of times we really don't know who is driving. If you've got a real mess there, you know, they're trying to pull bodies or people out of the car, we just don't know. To the best of our knowledge, to my knowledge, this information reflects the driver of one of the two vehicles, three vehicles, whatever was involved in the accident. Again, a lot of times the officer doesn't really know.
I'm not trying to press you.
No,
make sure
As I say, I wish I could answer the question better, Mr. Chairman, but it's...
Yeah. And what is the, is your office, if you're trying to, you know, in highway safety, what is going on in an attempt to do something about this kind of problem? And I ask the question because when I read Fairbanks papers, since I come to Fairbanks, I always make a point to read it. The impression I have, what it's worth, is that the great bulk of those people being arrested for OMBI are far over and above the age 21. The ones I see, they seem to be, most of them, and, you know, much older than that. Yet, just because, I don't know, but yet that doesn't reflect here, you see. I don't really know what's happening. What the department is, or your office is doing, you know, what you, to try to rectify some of this problem.
Okay, Senator, I can answer that the people that we pick up in the state of Alaska are averaging a 0.17 blood alcohol.
Yeah.
Our law in Alaska says it's illegal to drive at 1.0.
I understand.
That means that the people that we're picking up are obviously drunk. In other words, they're weaving, they're, you know, speeding up, slowing down, they're driving off the sides of the road. So we know they're drunk. They're the guys that you're seeing whose names are in the paper. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that we pick up in this category, we know through some of the other programs that I also administer, the alcohol safety action programs, which there's one in Fairbanks, there's one in Anchorage. So we also know from these programs that a lot of the people that we're picking up are conditioned drinkers. They've been drinking for a long time. So they don't really start doing things wrong until that time. We find, however, when it comes to the younger drivers, they're not used to drinking like the conditioned drinkers. So they start getting involved in accidents at 0.05, 0.08, which is why when the legislation was being looked at many years ago, I asked that they not just set the limit at 1.0, but they leave it so that we could still arrest people for being impaired at a lower level, because they can cause accidents too and fatalities.
So,
but that's 05, basically what happened.
05 and 08 would show up under the alcohol.
Yes, sir. Here.
Certainly, the impression I had was that it looks like the ages of the people that are getting arrested in my hometown, at least, almost all of them are above that 21. So
that's true. We, in our alcohol safety action programs, what we tried to do years ago was we had a situation where a young person was being arrested for drunk driving when they really didn't have a drinking problem. they had an attitude problem, maybe they blew a stop sign or something like that, but they'd get thrown into jail as a drunk driver, and they were processed and cost the state a lot of money by being processed that way. What we did was, many years ago, I advocated, and with a lot of help from various legislators and other people, got passed the point system bill. But the point system bill was, it tried to separate the habitual offender from the other types. Through this program and through our alcohol safety action programs, we're finding that most of the young people that are being arrested don't have a drinking problem yet. They have an attitude problem. And we don't put them in jail as drunk drivers. Well, under our laws, now, of course, they have to go through the jail. But in the process, when we refer them to various treatment centers, we don't send them to the Salvation Army Rehab Program or to other detoxification programs. We now send them to alcohol information school or defensive driving schools or whatever, trying to change their attitude, hopefully turning them around before they do develop drinking problems. So those are some of the things you ask what we're doing. We're trying to work with the situation under the present laws to, you know, make it better. And again, I can't say that this law is the panacea that's going to make everything better. I think that in looking at the highway safety program as a whole, when we developed emergency medical services, alcohol, everything helps.
Mm-hmm. Another question, please, Chief.
One of the people testifying earlier said that the driver training course that he took made a difference in his attitude toward driving, potential driving while drinking. Do we not currently require driver training of new licensees? Do other states do that?
Yes. The majority of the states require driver education. I personally believe that driver education would be as much help, at least, as something like this will be. We lack, right now, only 11% of the driving age students in high school have driver ed available to them in the state of Alaska. I believe that, you know, by bringing in some alcohol information into the driver ed program and that, I think it would help.
Your experience has been that the regular formal driving instruction courses are better than having the parents teach them.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, it has.
I taught mine, but I understand that isn't the best way to do it.
The chairman, a few years ago, we assisted Charlie in trying to get some vehicles to do that in the schools. It's a miserable failure. You can't just motivate people. And I think it's worth commenting here on this one facet that you raised on the appearance of what's occurring. And about, 6 years ago when we ran the controlled drinking seminars, man, is that an eye-revealing activity. You go into a hotel or whatever in a controlled environment, and there is correlation to body weight, physical condition, the whole work. And they have a series of simulators that you can play on. And regardless of what you order, somebody in the back room is fixing it just right. And what a difference. What a difference. And yet, you know, the 0.10 is an arbitrary number that's picked. A lot of people were gone long before that. Well, unfortunately.
How did you do it?
Man, terrible.
Good.
Terrible. Oh, I was through, I think, two intersections, and I was arguing with one of the troopers. I already stopped. And he said, yeah, but you forgot to press the pedal. Which I did, you know, the light was still blinking. Oh, it was a lot of fun.
Forgot to press the pedal.
Any other questions, Mr. Smith? Mr. Smith, let me ask you one question. Not much relevance to this bill, but it does relate to what you're concerned about. Maybe you think the legislature should go to putting those red license plates on for people convicted of and not entirely facetious. Was raised in the House several times when I was a member of the House, and never really got anywhere, but I'm becoming more and more convinced that that's what we might need to do something like that.
Mr. Chairman, I've been with Highway Safety for 12 years. I've been directing the program, and over the years I found that some things you can do to some people have a big impact. You can put some people in jail for 3 days and I'd say you're talking about 98% of the people, it's going to get their attention. 2% of the population, the driving population, I don't care what you do to them, it's not going to have any effect. Unfortunately, in our country, we are killing 50 to 55,000 people a year, which is more than the entire Vietnam kills for the whole war. And out of these 55, 25,000 of those people are being killed in alcohol-related involved accidents. 7% of our driving population in this country are killing those 25,000 people. So to answer your question, I think me as a law, of course, in my situation, I'd lose my job. I wouldn't have to worry about going to jail or red license plates. I'd have more serious problems. But I think you could get some people's attention. But I think those people whose attention you'd get, you'd have it anyway under the statutes and regulations that we have now. It, you know, it might pull out a few more. I really don't know. It's hard to say.
I was thinking about the other people who would see a red license plate. Stay away. Watch out, right?
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
So long as we're taking a few liberties here. What about the issue that was raised earlier about increasing penalties for drunk driving? That's really question one. Question two is a general one. What should the state do? What could and should the legislature do to deal with the problem that you just stated?
Okay, I suppose, Senator, you mean from my point of view?
From your point of view.
Right now, Alaska has, if not the toughest, some of the toughest drinking driving laws in the nation. That's based on efforts, many years of efforts, really working, pushing for various, helping, writing legislation, getting a lot of help from the legislature and getting passed. I'm not saying we have the best. We have a lot of problems with a lot of our laws. We have a 3-day mandatory jail sentence right now. And I'm sure most of us in this room know that a lot of people serve 3 or 4 hours. It's up to the discretion of the judge. Yet the law says there is no discretion. This guy's going to serve 3 days in jail. I think straightening that out, making it maybe 72 hours, period. You know, instead of a guy coming in at 11:59 on one day and getting out at 1:01 the next day. They say that's 3 hours. It's not, you know, or whatever, you know, it's, or 3 days. It's not. That could help, something like that. The things that we could do in Alaska, we have some very good programs. I've worked very closely with the Office of Alcoholism on setting up these 17 alcohol safety action programs around the state. Our recidivism rate through those programs is good from our point of view. We don't have the old revolving door situation that we used to have many years ago, where you had a guy go to a rehab program and he was back out on the street 6 months later and he was right back through the thing. As a matter of fact, many years ago when Mr. Cole, who now heads up the agency, and I testified before the legislature, I can't remember which body, that was one of the problems they had. At that time they were talking about giving him $5 million over a 5-year period or something like that. The rehab programs couldn't really show what was happening to these people. If you had 1,200 cases, you didn't know if that was one guy 1,200 times or 1,200 people once. We just didn't know. My program at that time told you all that stuff. We know who's coming in, who's going out, and all that. The recidivism rate that we've got, again, is very good. We're getting back probably 12, 15, 20%. It varies from year to year, month to month, depending, of these same people coming back. And we track these people for 5 years. So, and we track them for any alcohol-related violations, beating their wives, drunk driving. So we know that the programs are having an effect. Now, it's going to take many years and years to weed this out. You know, we spend an awful lot of money on alcohol problems in the state of Alaska. I was in the House Finance Committee hearing, and one of the figures thrown around was $100 million. I don't doubt that that's true. You know, yet we're not solving the problem. And I, truthfully, Senator, I don't know if I can tell you a way to solve it. I'm giving you some of my ideas that, on things that, in my experience, I think would help. And I'd be happy to furnish more information. I think this bill would help. You know, how much it would help, I really can't say. Most of the states, and that's what this other information is, most of the states, again, that lowered their drinking age were forced to raise the drinking age because it created a very high fatality and social problem for those states. That's why they raised it back up again. Now, unfortunately, a lot of these laws didn't change till a year or two ago, so they really haven't got a good statistical base yet as to how much good it's doing after they raised it. But they do have some information that shows it's making a difference already. And as I said earlier, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to hand out. I highlighted those areas that, you know, were pertinent from my program's point of view. You know, they are brief things. But I hope I answered your questions, Senator.
As well as I can expect at this point.
Okay. Thanks, Charlie. I've got to go up quarter two.
I think we're about ready. Any other questions, Mr. Smith? Well, thank you, Mr. Smith. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is any, no one else has signed up to speak on this bill. Is anyone else who's waiting to testify who did not sign up? Committee's adjourned.